Welcome to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Your host, Carl Nordgren, will teach you how to take an expansive view on what it means to be creative and entrepreneurial. Carl is an entrepreneur, novelist, and a lifelong student. For 20 years, he has been learning how to help folks grow their creative capacities. Now, here's Carl.
Welcome, folks. Thanks for tuning in to Exploring Your Creative Genius. I am Carl Nordgren. You're listening to 97.9 The Hill, the best radio station in the state of North Carolina. 5 years in a row. You know you got great people working here when they're the best radio station 5 years in a row. This is the show that believes that creativity is so important in your life, I refuse to define it for you. I want you to create your own understanding of what it means to be creative, what it means to be innovative and entrepreneurial. And so I'm going to give you lots of prompts. Charles Mingus said, you want me to improvise? Give me something to improvise off of, man. So I'm going to give you lots of prompts. One way I do that is by bringing you great guests. And today we've got a guest I'm just so excited about, Charles Johnson. Charles could probably fill up three different shows with us because he's identified his career in three different tracks. He was a Hollywood writer for a good bit of time. He was a business strategist, including being the strategic director for LA County's five-year development plan. Boy, what a job that sounds like. And then he's been an entrepreneur, and that's where we met. I was out in the West Coast. Charles is in Los Angeles. I was out in the West Coast doing a creativity workshop at Pepperdine's MBA program, and that's where Charles and I met. He was getting his MBA there. Charles, thanks so much for being on the show, man. I've just been so excited about getting you here. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me, Carl. I've been extremely excited about this. A little bit nervous, too. But hopefully I won't let you and your audience down.
Well, I have full confidence that won't happen. And so before we really get into some of the things that you've accomplished in your adult life, I want to hear, as I ask my other guests, to give people pictures of what it's like to have a creative childhood. What were you like when you were a child? And what was your creative life like in your childhood?
You know, I'm originally from Chicago, the south side of Chicago. Grew up poor. And so a lot of times, you know, I was my own head is all that I had. Right. you know, I was good at creating scenarios. You know, sometimes and this happens in any adult's life now, you know, you lose an argument with someone, you lose a fight as a kid, and you know, I go back and recreate that whole scenario, and I'd win the fight, whether it's an argument or a fist fight. But you know, I found this, you know, just kind of creating different scenarios in my head, you know, a kind of way of a savior. And you know, given away my age, you know, back in the 70s and the 80s. There was no Entertainment Tonight or Extra, you know, anything like that. So how things got on TV and got on film, it was kind of magic, especially being, you know, from Chicago. I wasn't on the West Coast where they probably saw, you know, a movie being shot or something like that. So, you know, it was real interesting to like see things on the television and see things on the screen. How does that happen? You know, right. And I think my curiosity of, you know, trying to figure that out and really having no one to turn to, you know, to find that out. And certainly internet wasn't around. You could just, you know, just Google anything. Right, right. I think it was just a lot of things in, you know, the things that I had no access to, you know, I was kind of forced to just come up with, right. Just create ways of, how it happened.
Well, it sounds like the childhood of somebody who would then go on to be a writer. Did you have that sense of yourself when you were young? I mean, when I was young, I wanted to be a writer. When you were young, did you want to be a writer? Did you see yourself in that role?
I did not as a writer. I think I knew I always wanted to do something in TV. And here's a story for you. My mom, I remember her having my sister and I in the car going somewhere. And I remember her asking, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? That kind of thing. I think my sister said she wanted to do something with dance or something in the arts. My sister's 3 years older than me. So I was, you know, much younger. And I remember saying, yeah, I want to do something like Three's Company. the TV show.
Right.
And my mom's like, what the heck does that mean? Now, fast forward to after I graduated from college, I got my first job at Warner Brothers. And pretty quickly, you may know this story. If you don't know what story is, here's one for you. I got chosen to, I was working on the show Lois and Clark, the Superman show.
Right.
And Dean Cain was the star, and Oprah Winfrey wound up going to a lot of different stars, television stars who were hot at the time, and asking the star to pick one crew member and set them up on a blind date on her show. And we would meet the blind date on the show. And so I was chosen for Lois and Clark. I don't know how they chose Dean Cain chose the woman that I would meet on the show. But we met out in Chicago. Obviously, I'm from Chicago, so it was easy to get my family in the audience. And I remember after the show, we're in the limousine going back.
So let me quickly interrupt. So you're meeting for the first time on the show itself?
Yes, we met on the show.
Okay.
It was kind of a cute, just matching type of show, Charles is a young 22-year-old aspiring writer, and here's this woman who also lives in LA that's, an aspiring whatever. And, we went out on a date, but we met on the show for the first time.
Oh, that's fun.
I probably skipped over probably the meat of what a lot of people wanted to hear there, but to answer your question, we're in the limousine going back to the hotel. My mom and sister were in the car. And my mom goes, she was just kind of shaking her head. She's like, she just met Oprah Winfrey and she's sitting in this limousine and, passing all these areas that we never really could even afford to go into in my younger years. And she goes, how the heck did you ever get involved and what made you want to do this? And I said, well, you remember when you asked that question, what do you want to do when you grow up? And I said, I want to do something like Three's Company. This is it.
That's wonderful. That is wonderful. Well, we've got another minute in this segment, so let's stay with that particular track. Again, I said that Charles has got three tracks he could talk about. And so since we're digging in here a little bit on the Hollywood entertainment side, let's stay with that for the next minute. Where do you want to take the conversation next? I know you wrote for a couple of different networks. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, Hollywood is a tough place, and, just like anyone else, it was a struggle. It took me probably a good 10 years to get my shot as a writer, as a paid writer, through the Writers Guild. But once it did, once I got it, it was, I felt that all of the turmoil was worth it. It wasn't easy getting there. But it was certainly worth it.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Well, folks, we're going to have our first break here. I'm going to tease you here a little bit, because when you come on back, we're going to talk just a little bit more about the Hollywood world with Charles. And my tease is, do you remember a guy named Michael Jordan? So come on back from the break, folks.
You're listening to Exploring Your Creative Genius with Carl Nordgren. Welcome back to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Here's your host, Carl Nordgren.
Welcome back. Thanks for coming back, folks. Our guest is Charles Johnson. At the end of the first segment, after hearing a bit about Charles's background in Hollywood, he's got so much more to talk to us about. For instance, he acted in a show. But what I teased you all about, the role that Charles played in Michael Jordan being in Space Jam. Take it away, Charles. I want to hear about this.
Yeah, absolutely. Man, I forgot about the acting role, too. Maybe cover that another time. But piggybacking off the Lois and Clark, I was a PA at the time. And that means production assistant is essentially, the low man on a totem pole. I remember that Dean Cain is a really good athlete. I think he actually played football for Princeton. Even though at the time he was, one of the, biggest TV stars, he still would go and hang out with all of us, low level people, playing basketball on pickup games in the basketball court. But then Michael Jordan, he was coming off of his retirement. the first retirement. He was coming off of that to come back into the league right before the second three-peat. And, you know, he was rusty. So I guess he had already committed to shooting this to this movie that few people know about called Space Jam. He rented or Warner Brothers gave him the, one of the parking lots, one of the biggest parking lots in on the lot. And he rented the floor from Long Beach State and had it shipped over and built a court around that, essentially made that put a huge tent around it. And that's where he practiced at night. So he would shoot during the day and he would practice at night. And inside this tent, you know, was obviously full court basketball, but weight system, you know, music system, little golfing area. Everybody, I don't care how big of a star you were, everybody wanted to get into that tent to meet Michael Jordan. That's the first time made me realize how big he was, because, you know, I'm thinking of someone like Mel Gibson or Clooney hadn't become Clooney. You know, he was still on ER at the time. But everybody, I'm telling you, everybody wanted to get into that tent, and he was limiting people getting in there. But Dean Cain, he let in because Dean was an athlete and he was real competitive. And of course, because I knew Dean, I was like, dude, you got to help me get in there. I'm from Chicago, you know, say, I'll do what I can do. Short of a longer story, he got me in, but I had to still sneak in because the time that he wanted to get me in, I couldn't make it because I was still actually doing work. But I snuck in right underneath Mitch Richmond, who was going in there to play. And I looked like a basketball player. So he just assumed I was, you know, going there to play. He walked in. I walked in after him. And once you're in there, you're in.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It was a bunch of pickup games. And it was Grant Hill. It was obviously Michael Jordan. It was Mitch Richmond. It was some college players in there and some celebrities from Warner Brothers at the time. And we just, for 3 hours, I didn't care what was going on at work, we just played a bunch of pickup games. And that dude is really competitive. He is really competitive. He stopped us at one point and said, I know some of you people are not supposed to be in here, but if now that you are, play hard or get out.
So you played basketball. Were you on the same team or against Michael?
I was against him. He blocked my shot once, but I got 1 point in there. That was back when I knew how to dunk. So, you know, I was still, you know, I was, you know, I didn't embarrass myself too bad, but I said, there's no way. You understand why, you know, NBA players get paid so much, because they really do look like superheroes out
there. Yeah. And they've got the skill. I mean, yes. I mean, it's the best athletes of all are playing basketball, it seems to me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's wonderful. That's so cool. Well, hearing these wonderful stories, these great experiences, this creative background of yours, of course, it doesn't surprise anybody to know that you've become this very successful entrepreneur. I know you did a couple of gigs before the one you want to talk to us mostly about today. So give us just a little background about your early entrepreneurial efforts, and then let's get into the company and the product that you're launching now.
Sure. You know, I never set out to be an entrepreneur. I never even thought about it. But I think working in Hollywood, because no job is forever, you know, especially back in the 80s, 90s, early 2000s, you know, working at a company for 10, 20, 30 years, that does not apply to Hollywood. It never did. And so I was used to jumping from job to job. And in a sense, you become an entrepreneur that way. At least you would adopt the entrepreneur's mindset.
So you're creating your own work. Yeah.
Right. In between jobs in Hollywood, everyone's always looking for something else to do, you know, how to, you know, supplement their income, those types of things. And I think my first business venture, I have, you know, a lot of friends who are actors, and some are in commercials, some are only in TV, some are in film. Very few, you know, crossed over at that time. But the big issue back, I think when we first met, Carl, was that actors in TV commercials had problems getting in front of casting directors for TV and film.
Right.
So I said, you know, they have IMDb for TV and film, but they don't have that for TV commercials.
Oh,
so
cool.
My first business venture was doing kind of an IMDb for TV commercials. in order to help actors get noticed.
That sounds smart.
Yeah, that's what I was developing when you and I met.
Right.
And then from there, my second business venture was Pause Commercial. It was an advertising technology ad tech company that, you know, I found a CTO, and it's right when Netflix was becoming Netflix. Essentially, I was like, you know what? They're going to saturate themselves with this subscription only model. At some point, they're going to become saturated, and they're going to have to revert to advertising, which is what they're doing now anyway.
Right.
So let me find a way to, you know, help them increase their revenue, even if it's the ones like Hulu, where it is an ad supported system. Let's find a way to do this. And when people paused their content, it was just paused. So I'm like, well, why don't we serve an ad the moment that people pause? And so I actually filed to get a method patent on that. I was granted the method patent, and I built a company around that. And that was my second business venture.
Outstanding. Well, we've got 30 seconds in this segment. So tease us a little bit for what we're going to talk about in the final segment. Folks, if you have friends, men, people of color, you're going to want to make sure they hear this next segment coming up, because that's what Charles's product is all about. So a half a minute, Charles, how do you want to set us up for the last segment?
Razor bumps.
Okay.
I want to get rid of them because I had them my entire life, and I didn't think I had a solution that would help other people until my friend said, hey, knucklehead, you're a business dude. So that's what we can talk about next.
Well, I need something to take care of my knuckleheadness, but I think this is wonderful. Well, thank you so much for listening, folks. We have one segment left, and come on back from the break.
You're listening to Exploring Your Creative Genius with Carl Nordgren. Welcome back to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Here's your host, Carl Nordgren.
Welcome back, folks. Thanks for coming back. In this segment, Charles is going to tell you about this great new product that he's just launched. Take it away, sir.
Okay, thanks, Carl. So it's called the Bump Serum, and it's a three-product shaving system designed to mitigate razor bumps. It's a shaving gel, it's an aftershave, and it's a sealant cream, a moisturizing cream. And the thought process behind this is that working together as a system, that can really help every aspect of the shaving in order to mitigate or sometimes eliminate razor bumps. So most Black men, I'm sure that, you know, some people on this call, especially if you're involved in the military, are, you know, used to these stats. 60% of all Black men are suffer from razor bumps in some way, shape, or form. Men in the military, 45% of all Black men in the military are suffering from razor bumps and is kind of help hurting them from getting promotions because of the shaving waivers that they have to go on. People in the military know that story better than I do. But essentially, we just want to become a solution for razor bumps. I want to say from when I first started shaving at 17 years old, up until I was about 40, I want to say, I just lived with razor bumps. I tried every solution out there. They're depilatories, which is, you know, kind of a depilatory is like Nair, you know, how it just kind of, you put this cream on and it, quote unquote, melts the hair away.
Right.
They have something like that for Black men that Black men have been using for ages. I remember my grandfather talking about it. I tried that and it was like just burning my skin, irritating me, causing allergic reactions. A lot of other solutions, they had, you know, other ingredients in there that was causing allergic reactions. And so I just got used to it, just not having a solution. For a while, I was wearing turtlenecks to hide my neck.
Oh, okay.
Because, yeah, it was really bad. But you probably will see, you know, or hear, you know, a lot of Black men talk about, you know, why they keep a beard rather than try to shave. It's just we've gotten used to the fact that we just can't find a solution. some people are lucky and they find solutions, and good for them. And if there's product out there that works for them, great. But I couldn't find one product that worked for me. What happened was I started talking with doctors and dermatologists. Anytime that I was, you know, just giving doc, do you know anything that can help, you know, get rid of these darn razor bumps? And I kept hearing this word, inflammation. Every doctor, skincare professional, they kept talking about inflammation. So I'm like, okay, well, maybe I should start just looking on my own to try to find how can I reduce inflammation. So I started working with experimenting with different ingredients, and always running it past, you know, those doctors and dermatologists, because I didn't want to, you know, melt my face off or blow up a neighborhood, you know. I've eventually found an aftershave that really started bringing that inflammation down. And once the inflammation was down, it was easier for me to shave. Then it was the shaving cream, which is kind of thick and foamy and, you know, kind of clogs up the razor blade. I'm like, okay. And it's kind of a incubator for bacteria. And so I found out that bacteria is one of the reasons that causes razor bumps. I'm like, okay, I got to come up with a new shaving gel, and found out that shaving creams. I found out that shaving gels actually were better than shaving creams. And so I, short of a longer story, found a solution and created a solution working with dermatologists that would essentially clean the blade and my face, and that would glide easier off my skin as I'm shaving. So now I have the shaving gel and the aftershave. And then I learned later on that there was, like, if you moisturize your face afterwards, after you shave, then it helps retain the water. And then the hairs will grow out of your face a little bit more straight.
Okay.
Because, you know, black men, our hairs curl back into the skin. But
right.
With the moisturizer to help, you know, the hair grow straight. And then next time you shave, it'll be a lot easier. And essentially for like the last maybe 10, 12 years, I have not had to worry about razor bumps at all.
Well, we've got another minute and a half, and so it's all yours, except I just want to make this one comment, and that is, boy, when you started talking about this, I pictured people in the morning beginning their day in pain and discomfort because they don't have your product. And if you can bring them some opportunity to start their day in a way that doesn't bring them pain, holy cow, is that ever a great, great offering.
Yeah, thanks. And that's the aim. You know, we're here to solve a problem. And I found out that, you know, men in the military, they have to shave every day,
right?
Or keep that clean shaving appearance. And if they don't, then they have to go on the shaving waiver thing. And if you're on a shaving waiver, that kind of prevents you from moving up the ranks or getting promotion. And most recently, you know, the new administration would say, hey, if you don't have your razor bump problem, under control within a year, you may be at risk of being discharged.
Oh my!
Yeah, it's kind of a crazy thing, but you know they take it very serious. And you know I think African American men are really going to suffer from this. I don't think race has anything to do with
sure.
it. I don't want to politicize this at all. At the end of the day, this is a problem in the military or not in the military.
Right.
It's just a problem that needs to be solved. And I think you know our product is at least a strong contender to help resolve that problem.
Outstanding. Well, folks, I've right here and now I've decided we're going to bring Charles back for a second show because we're running out of time. When the show is posted on the Chapelboro website, folks, not only will there be my short little write-up, there'll be contact information from Charles about the product, other information to help educate you. Charles, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And we're going to be on our first trade show in Denver, Colorado in 3 weeks.
Outstanding. Outstanding. Thank you very much. Folks, have a great day.
This has been Exploring Your Creative Genius on 97.9 The Hill. You can listen to other episodes on chapelboro.com.